This is Santana Adams on 10/31/2021 at 3:49 p.m. This interview is in partnership with the Kentucky Oral History Society and the Kentucky Oral History Commission. So to go ahead and start, I'm sitting here with Ileana Dennis. Is there anything you don't want to talk about? Is there any language that you would prefer that I not use when we're talking about this topic? Explain if there is a question that you don't want to answer, you can just say, I prefer not to talk about this. So we'll go ahead and start with your name, age, and your birthplace.
My name is Ileana Dennis. I'm 21 years old, and I was born in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Okay. So what schools have you attended, and what is your current level of educational attainment?
Like all my schools or like significant schools?
I would just do like maybe your...
High school and college?
Yeah, that works.
I attended Macaulay High School, the all-girls Catholic school, in Cincinnati, Ohio, and then I'm attending currently Berea College in Berea, Kentucky.
Okay.
And I am on track for a bachelor's degree.
Awesome. So can you tell me a little bit about the occupations that you've had and your current occupation?
My first occupation was a office assistant at the labor program who deals with student labor, is basically HR for labor for students. And then I worked at Speedway during COVID and pandemic as a cashier. And then my current occupation is a GSTR 210 and GST 180, which is General Required Studies, teaching assistant, and that's just English.
Okay. And then you had mentioned working at Speedway. Was that here or was that somewhere?
That was in Louisville, Kentucky.
So to get into the topic of the protest of 2020, in what locations did you attend protests for the summer?
I attended protests for Berea, Kentucky, and Louisville, Kentucky during those protests.
Okay, awesome. If you remember like a general time or a specific time, what days did you participate in the protests of summer 2020?
I do not remember days. I only remember three separate instances. The one in Louisville, or the two in Louisville, were in the month of July. And then the one in Berea was June.
Okay. Awesome. So what amount of time would you estimate that you were in each of the protests that you attended?
Hour max?
Okay. Did you help organize a protest, or did you help organize a group of people to go to any protest?
I helped organize college students to go to these protests, as well as my friends were organizing the Berea protest.
So what would it look like for you when you were like getting people that you knew from college to come with you? Was it something that you did through social media, or did you text people, or was it by word of mouth?
It was by word of mouth for safety.
Okay, awesome. How did you find out about the protest?
For Berea, Kentucky, it was by social media from other organizers. And for Louisville, it was driving around the city and seeing where they were.
Okay. For those instances that you did use social media to kind of help you find the locations that these things were happening at, what social media apps were being used?
It was Snapchat on private stories.
Okay. Right. Let's see. So what made you decide that protesting was necessary? What were your personal reasons for participating?
Well, let me flex my major. as a peace and social justice major, I feel it's my right to protest, and anyone's right to protest, as well as these issues have been going long enough, but this movement has enough momentum to have a significant protest. So for my personal values, it was more people arguing about my life as a black person. Why are human rights being argued in this country when we're supposed to be, we're taught that it's like the best country, but I walk down the street and I get killed.
Yeah.
So that's my main thing.
Definitely. So did you have any reservations or hesitations in participating first in Berea and then for Louisville?
I did, because my family is very racist. I grew up in a white family predominantly, and they don't like me participating in anything of culture. For Berea, I kept it secret.
Yeah.
I just went. I said I was going to go get stuff from my apartment that I left. For Louisville, Kentucky, I had moved out, but still was in contact with my parents, and went regardless. But I was still hesitant because, as someone who's disabled, I can't really do jail. Mm-hmm. So I would strategically plan when to go and when to leave.
Yeah, definitely. Did you face any kind of outside pressures from any other groups or organizations that would have made you feel unsafe?
Someone a part of a Nazi thing, the Proud Boys, was our neighbor.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. He didn't apply outside pressure, but his presence was intimidating.
Would you say that
as well as my grandma's a Trump supporter, mm-hmm. within that cult, you know?
Yeah. Would you say that you faced any outside pressures from National Guard or police presences while in Berea or in Louisville?
No, because I left before police presence was there.
Okay.
On purpose. I was not about to do that.
Clean, understandable. So how had COVID-19 impacted the way that you were living your life in terms of work, school, and your social life? And how might have it changed during or after the protest?
That's a big old question.
We can break it down.
Yeah,
you're also very welcome to...
So
let's see, I'll highlight it for you so you can kind of read through it as you go if you'd like, or I can always re-say it for you.
So when COVID hit, I had to stay 2 months out of college after everyone was sent home. My job was FA, which is... So my job switched, my classes ended.
Mm-hmm.
My relationships, very small. People were dropping like flies. Then I moved back home, and I couldn't handle it. I didn't have any social relationships whatsoever. There weren't people reaching out. If they were reaching out, it was more like, are you still alive type of reaching out. I didn't work because my family wouldn't let me work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, still no school. I had a summer class over the summer. I think I had 2 summer classes. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was 2 summer classes, so...
And then leading up to the month or so before the protest, were you working at this point? Were you back out into a semi-normal kind of social life, or would you still say that you were pretty heavily isolated?
So I moved to Louisville, and then I didn't start working until the summer, actually.
Yeah.
I started in January, and then protests kept happening, and then the big protest happened.
Yeah.
I was still working.
Yeah.
I was doing full-time school by then. I had 2 summer classes still. It was a very short span. I moved, and then everything happened. My social life did get better because I was making friends in the city. COVID restrictions were getting less. But it was still very, what's it called, high risk.
Yeah.
High risk because it's still COVID and everything.
Do you feel like the restrictions on COVID lessened after the protests, seeing as these protests were really the first big break in protocol that we had seen with COVID, you know, outside of people who had just, you know, not wanted to follow the protocol the whole time, but within people who had, did you see any shift being in Louisville after the protests of seeing more people out or seeing more socialization again, or would you say that that remained about the same?
I believe in Louisville it remained the same. for counter protests that happened during the protest, no one wore a mask there.
Yeah.
But for people protesting on our side, it was hit or miss for masks.
Definitely.
But we're also in Kentucky, so people weren't wearing it. We couldn't, as workers, we couldn't force people to wear masks or ask because of HIPAA laws.
Yeah.
So it was just depending on values who wore masks.
Definitely. So you protested during the pandemic, of course, as we've been talking about. What made you feel like breaking public health protocols against large public gatherings was necessary in this case? Like, if you could just talk a little bit about that. Like, what made you feel like, you know, this was of the utmost importance?
I actually think that for the protesting times, it wasn't against large public it wasn't against the protocols of, if you're outside, you were fine. If it was inside, it was not okay.
Yeah.
Especially in the city of Louisville, it wasn't against their guidelines.
Okay.
But for the need, even I'm immune compromised, so I still felt the need. And as long as I was distancing, that was fine. Still the fact that people were dying and getting hate crimed around me.
Yeah.
Black trans woman dying. It's the fact that it's not uncommon for someone to have police trauma if you're black. It's very not uncommon. It's something, it was me looking and reflecting at my own life and realizing even though I was raised a certain way, I was so scared of the cops. From media, I was taught from TV to not interact with cops. And if I do interact, it's hands up only.
Yeah.
You don't speak, hands up only. So it's the fact that people shouldn't have to be scared of something that's supposed to help you.
Yeah, that's completely understandable. So with this being out in large crowds and things, did you feel like, you talked about being immunocompromised, did you feel like you were putting yourself or others at risk because of COVID, like, during these protests, or what were your feelings about that?
I was definitely putting myself out at risk, but at that point, I believe I had already had a vaccine.
Yeah.
If I didn't have a vaccine, I had, like, double masked up.
Mm-hmm.
And just think, I wasn't putting anyone else at risk because everyone else around me had good health systems. Like, good. They had insurance. They had everything they needed to be healthy. I was the only one who was poor within the situation of where I was living and everything.
Yeah, out of, like, your social group?
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see.
No healthcare.
What were some thoughts you experienced on the day before you would protest in these separate locations? Like, what were some before thoughts that you had?
Well, I didn't have before thoughts because the protesting was spontaneous.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, people are doing this. Oh, I see black people doing this. I can join.
Okay.
More like that. For the Bria one, I felt a lot safer because I was going there to go. It was still spontaneous, but, like, the thoughts beforehand is, it's safer because we're right next to a college campus, and if anything happens, the college has us.
Yeah.
In a sense. Public safety was right next to us. So it was more, I was scared, but we're right on campus. The townies won't really do much on campus.
Definitely.
And they wouldn't do anything on church grounds.
Would you say that some of that has to do with the fact that Berea College is a private university, therefore they have private land laws? Where that, like, sense of protection comes from?
I would say it's because the college came first and then the town.
Yeah.
So the college, though it's still, like, a town type thing, the college does have a significant amount of power on how things are run here.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, with the sidewalk laws and stuff like that. You saw how they work.
Yeah.
But it could be the private institution. But at the same time, if anything happens on their property, I can't sue them either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like, because of what I was doing, they wouldn't penalize me for it, like other institutions might.
Right. So what was it like in the crowd during the protest? Like, what about being in the crowd really stuck out the most to you, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing or something that lies somewhere in between?
Something that stuck out to me was the people in Berea, especially the white folk, only went to one protest. It was performative activism. The college had performative activism. Some of the folks in Louisville didn't seem like they were going often, or things like that. Good things are is that there was large crowds in Louisville, so it's different from Berea than from Louisville. Berea gave me a sense of, like, we're doing this, but we're not going to where it matters.
Yeah.
In Louisville, we're doing it where it matters, and so.
Would you say that that was where it mattered because it was Breonna Taylor? And also after that, if you wouldn't mind to give me your own definition of what performative activism means to you.
Yeah, so where it matters is where you gotta think about it strategically. Where has the most media coverage?
Hmm.
Who's getting beating in the streets, and where is it being televised? It is a lot more significant to do it. If you're in a small town, yeah, that's significant. But if you're doing it in places like where you don't have protection and then there's a large group, that's a lot more televised rather than, yeah, a couple college students sat outside a church.
Yeah.
And then in Louisville, it is very important to do it in the city where she had died. It's very important because that shows that city's not taking that shit.
Yeah.
As well as that it sparked a movement, and then there was George Floyd's that sparked a huge movement.
Mm-hmm.
It sparked movements around the world. But the fact that these cities were doing it is why it sparked,
yeah,
partially. And the performative activism is, like, the way I see it is doing it for clout because other people are doing it.
Oh, definitely.
Like, the Instagram blocks, the black squares, people I've never seen speak about social issues. We're posting black squares on Instagram because it was trending. Or people who I've never seen give a shit were posting black squares on TikTok. Like, how does that help the movement? Instead of signing petitions, instead of going out and marching, or calling your senators, or calling the police department itself, how is that making a difference, just a black square? That's kind of like, if you're going to do something, make it matter.
Yeah.
And then performative activism is also like saying you support these, but like not. It's kind of like, oh, I support you for being gay, but don't let me see it,
yeah,
type of performative. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So, did you receive any training on nonviolent or safety beforehand with the protests, like whether that was like an in-person training or if it was just things you were seeing online that were showing you how to be safe during the protest?
I did see a lot of things to be safe about. Don't use milk for tear gas, that actually makes it worse. Always, if you're wearing boots, make sure you wear the right color shoelaces because it actually symbolizes Proud Boys versus Black Lives Matter. There was a lot of things on social media that could prepare you for a protest if you're going to go protest, as well as I've gotten training at Berea College for protesting for a class, community organizing and movements. So I have had training as well as like looking at past. What did people do in the civil rights movement? You didn't, it's looking at that and applying it to these situations. If I get beat, I get beat. At least I still have my humanity with me, type thing.
Definitely.
As well as seeing how people would revolt was really interesting. They would pick up these tear gas grenades and throw them right back at the police with, like, oven mitts. I've never seen that.
Uh-huh.
And tongs, and that was really cool. So people would have, like, a whole survival kit, like, with tongs, water, band-aids. It was really cool seeing who was prepared and who was making these kits. There's people who had a list of like protests, which ones to go to based on safety.
Yeah. Did you happen to, along with this kind of idea of safety, did you see any medic tents, especially when you were in the protests in Louisville? Did you see people that were prepared to help people who were putting themselves out there to get injured to fight for something that they believed in?
I personally didn't see it, but I have seen it on social media for Louisville. That you would wear a red backpack with a cross, and that was a medical supply person. Not necessarily tents, because that's breaking law for setting up something on property that isn't designated for that, but you would have a backpack that was red or some sort of identification that you had medical supplies and could help. As well as, like, I believe there was, like, nurses and doctors, if they weren't dealing with COVID and were protesting, who would wear something that shows that they had training on it.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like within the protesters, not outside, but within the protesters, do you feel like there was a general want and protection for each other when it came to your safety? Do you feel like the people in the crowd, if something was to have happened, would have been able to assist you?
Yes.
So, let's see.
Both protests, in Brea and in Louisville.
So, for these protests, what was your call to action? Not just to deem this necessary, but to make you get involved yourself.
My call to action?
Yeah, you recalled it, like, what was that pivotal moment? Like, that moment in your mind. I know you said that a lot of your protests had been pretty spontaneous on the days that you did go out. Mm-hmm. What was, like, that thing that clicked in your head that you're like, drop everything I'm doing and go and do this?
Well, first off, I would feel shitty if I didn't want to be someone who had performative activism. I also don't want to be someone who's in the background, especially if I'm preaching for my major that these things need to change, but I'm not actually doing anything. That's one of the things, as well as, like, to prove my family wrong that I can still go protest and come back home safe. They were very concerned about me, just like, oh, you're gonna get arrested, we're not gonna help you. I'm just like, it doesn't always end in arresting.
Yeah.
As well as just in general, I needed to do this. This is something I wanted to be on the right side of history.
Definitely. Did you feel like in these protests that, you know, despite what the media had showed us, that, you know, they had shown, like, a lot of looting and a lot of perceptions that they had, do you feel like the perceptions you had within these protests would counter with more of a peaceful approach?
Yes. Brea did not do any looting. There was no looting whatsoever. We were actually just sitting there peacefully protesting. For Louisville, it's slightly different because there was people being violent, but I didn't see any looting. And if there was looting, it was people taking advantage who weren't a part of the protest. We would just go out and see a protest and then go loot.
Did you firsthand experience, have any experiences witnessing violence? Or were these things that were kind of heard through word of mouth or social media?
Personally, I did get hate crimed over, I wasn't even protesting. I was just a black person walking down where the protesting was happening at night. I did see some violence. I saw someone spit on someone. I saw someone get hit. I saw someone swerve their car at us. But there is also a lot on social media of people. Who was it? There was, like, a person who, like, had their clothes stripped down just for sitting on a street with a sign.
Hmm.
Just beat to pulp. There's multiple instances. And another thing to look at is the lynching rates have gone up. The sundown towns have become more active. That was something that was scaring me, too, being in Kentucky. Luckily, I wasn't in a sundown town, but, like, with these protests happening, it did threaten lives more.
Definitely. And this violence that you were seeing, if you know anything about it, was this, like, in-crowd violence, or was this violence coming from outside sources within or into protesting crowds? Like, was this an outsider getting mad, inciting violence within the protest, or was it, like, within protest kind of violence, if that makes any sense.
Personally, I don't know for the ones that I attended, but I have seen a lot on people saying that there was inside violence where people were staging things. There was people who, like, what was it, who started loot, like, with the Target thing. There was people who started the loot, but it wasn't actually a protester. It was someone on the other side when it comes to, like, who versus who, you know. It was the other side. As well as, like, that's why the shoelaces were important, to see who was there so you can call them out if they have Proud Boy colors but are on the protest side. That's why it was very important to look at the shoelaces, because if they have yellow shoelaces, you need to get them out. You need to move away from them.
So you feel like that was a piece of information that was a way of keeping other protesters safe, was knowing the colors of your shoelaces and to be aware of
the symbols. They have tattoos.
Were there, like, a specific kind of tattoo or a specific placement? It's okay if you don't know.
It's a lot of, like, farm tattoos, actually. Any Nazi symbol, if they're doing, you know, the okay, the gotcha thing. There was a lot of, like, if you do, like, a three, anything that symbolizes white power.
So, like, maybe a lot of, like, hand symbols?
There was a lot of hand symbols. There was a lot of certain tattoos where, like, there's Nazi symbols, like the sevens.
Yeah.
And then there's the one where it's, like, there's a symbol where it's, like, they put the number of Jewish people who've died in the Holocaust, and that's a symbolization that there should have been more. There was it's a number they would put on them as well.
So you all were pretty aware of, at least in your group, of the things that you needed to know in order to keep yourself safe from people.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you understand and value the life of Breonna Taylor, and not only her life, but her death, too?
So this is where I lack. I know more about George Floyd than Breonna Taylor, actually. But from my understanding, Breonna Taylor was someone who did service for other people, and there was no reason why she would have died. There was a lot of misinformation during her death. There was people saying, oh, her boyfriend did drugs, or, which doesn't really matter at the time, it's still a life that was lost. I heard it was a flyaway bullet. I heard there was a lot of misinformation. And with that misinformation, it didn't matter. She still died in her apartment. I think she was, like, naked or something. I don't know. In her home, in leisure time, died, which is not okay.
No, definitely not. And from most of the news reportings, we saw that there were actually multiple bullets that were fired at her. She was getting off of a shift as, I want to say it was a paramedic.
I think she was a paramedic or someone who, like, helps police, technically.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of stupid. How are you going to shoot at someone who actively is in service with you? And why does it take multiple bullets? Why do you have trigger finger happy? And it's just a lot to unpack. And with her death, it sparked rage. Straight up rage from the communities.
Do you know, do you have any information off the top of your head about how the entry into the home for those police officers worked?
No, but I have information on, like, the way they're trained.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for entering homes. I don't know if they had a warrant. There usually needs to be a warrant. I know that much. They do need to announce their entry if it's not a warrant. As well as, they need, if they're going to go through stuff, they do need a suspicion. What has made, is it a smell? Is it, they do need one of those type of things.
Yeah.
For shooting, there is less protocol than what there should be. They're very trigger happy.
So was Breonna Taylor's death uniquely motivating? In what way? And were there also other people's lives and deaths that were meaningful to you?
I do think it was uniquely motivating because she had a whole family. It was in a city that is actually not really racially charged as much. Louisville is very diverse. There is a lot of deaths that happen there, but it is diverse. And one of the things that is noticeable about Louisville is there's a lot of shootings. So the polarization of people in these neighborhoods, predominantly black neighborhoods, like just like in any city where minorities are, there's a lot of shootings, there's a lot of deaths. But the fact that she, in her life, was actively trying to help those getting hurt by these shootings, still somehow got fucked over by the cops, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. That, on top of, I believe it was after George Floyd, her death was. So because it was after George Floyd and she died the way that she did by the hands of a group of cops, when there was already a movement starting to like configure from George Floyd's death, it's the action that there was multiple big deaths happening. So anyone who's dying after George Floyd who was black was being highlighted in a sense to the community. If it was by the hands of the cops.
Definitely, and that brings me kind of to my next question. Are there any other names that stand out to you when it comes to black people that have died at the hands of police brutality? Are there any names that stick out to you besides George Floyd and Breonna Taylor?
Emmanuel Till, or I believe that one. There's a long list. The kid with the Skittles bag, I forgot his name, I should know that. Trayvon, yeah, he's the one who started the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. That instance was the start of it. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like potentially the list is getting too long for people to remember? In some previous interviews of some people I talked to, I'd had someone mention the fact that there were people who kept count of the names, but it was also getting to the point where it was happening so often that he had found it impossible to be able to remember all the names. Do you feel like that's something that's valid?
I do think it is valid. But someone who's actually, who is protesting, who is immersed, if that is their social issue, they should know. They should know.
And this is speaking, not that they might not have something written down or
it doesn't have to be off the top of their head, but if it signaled significant history, like the guy with the Skittles, I should know this. Yeah. I know I should know this. Emmanuel Till. And then there's also like things of the past, being a black person, I do have to know Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Carter G. Wood. I have to know that. That is just something as a black person you should know. These are the people who have gotten us rights. Who is getting us rights now?
Yeah.
You gotta be able to pick out those people in history.
Definitely.
I do think the list is long, but that's significant to what is happening in our country.
Definitely.
And I do think there should be a memorial for all these, as well as, like, there is a list, and they do distinguish them from LGBTQ+ community versus not. There's a list of just trans black women dying. That's like the new thing right now. Mm-hmm. Who is dying on the streets?
Yeah. I mean, as we've seen, trans black women have the highest rate of deaths within the gay community. They're often the most violently attacked, and oftentimes that does correlate with police violence. So
yeah, that's the newest list that is happening right now. As well as there's now multiple studies happening within the LGBTQ+ community. It's like a social hierarchy of oppression type thing.
Would you say that intersectionality plays into this?
Yes, intersectionality always plays into this in any social issue. That's something I've learned. Intersectionality does play, because you can't, for speaking of like black trans people, you can't just be black and you can't just be trans. It's black trans people who are dying the most. That's intersectionality. Mm-hmm. Black people on average are dying. Trans people on average are dying. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's black and trans, they're statistically higher of dying just by walking down the street. Mm-hmm. Intersectionality plays a role in solidarity politics. solidarity politics plays a role in the greater issue of just politics in general. But intersectionality is a big portion that people don't think about, but always have a role within these issues.
Do you think that it's a big portion of what we're seeing happen with police brutality?
I do think so. There's a hierarchy with, like, people, you know, how they're, the lighter you are, the less likely you're gonna get killed.
So you'd say that colorism plays a role in this?
Colorism plays a role in this. If you're black and Asian, you're more likely to get sexually assaulted than killed. There's so much. There's just so much. Intersectionality happens. Well, if you're a woman versus a man, black men get killed more than black women. The darker you are, the more likely you're going to get killed.
Definitely. So were you involved or affiliated with BLM or any other major organizations?
I was not involved or affiliated. The most I might have was that I was posting for the Young Black Panthers Association.
Okay. What were the goals and actions of the Young Black Panthers Association, if you remember currently?
Education, history, and safety, I believe. I only made a single post for them. It was more like, please do at this and help our association and join type of post.
Yeah. So when we're talking about all of this, there's this phrase that came up a lot during the time of these protests, and that phrase was defund the police. So what does defund the police mean to you?
Defund the police. So this is something I researched, actually. Terms have different meanings across the political spectrum. Defund the police for someone who's more like leftist or liberal literally means we do not need the police if they're not helping us. But for me personally, defund means defund until reform. If they're not using the money for reform, then they don't need the money at all.
Do you feel like our police currently are proactive, or are they just reactive entities that we have?
They're reactive because their training is only 4 weeks, while Canada's training is 11 weeks.
So how did participating in the 2020 protests impact the relationship that you had with your friends, your family, or your community? And I know you'd already talked a little bit about your family, so what were some of the impacts that you saw from this?
My grandma has labeled me a leftist liberal scum. My friends don't say anything because that's my major, that's who I am. They can't say anything, especially if they go to this college. In work, I kept my life secret because workplace, there's no reason to bring that up.
Yeah. Kind of keep a solid line between your personal life and your work life, you would say?
Yeah, I would have to. Unless it's my TA position, when it comes to like things outside of the college, it's more of a safety thing.
So do you think that the media, I mean, we saw so much come out of the media across the country when all of this stuff was happening. Do you feel like the media was accurate in their detailing of the events and attitudes of the protesters, in your opinion?
No. Well, media has polarization. There's also opinion pieces being written. There's always a left side or a right side within media. So left side is either being too descriptive or not having the right facts, making opinions about what to do. And the right side is bashing the left side. There is a Goldilocks zone. I think it's the media chart I'm talking about.
If you could explain it.
Give me once. I'll pull it up.
Okay.
But basically, for accurate news sources, you need something like NPR, they're still a little left, or like Washington Post, where it's not biased pieces. You're looking at political bias while media is being transmitted. If you're going to watch CNN, that's going to be more Republican. If you're going to watch Fox News, of course that's going to be more Republican. So if you're going to watch the news on those sites, you have to remember they're biased. And what is it, Democratic, there's a Democrats site where they also broadcast it. That's biased too. So if you're just going for it for facts, then you don't want to use those sites. That's just how it's always been. That's happened with 9/11. That's happening with every big event happened past 9/11. That's just how it is. It's polarization of the media.
So you would say that this Goldilocks zone is maybe the zone of safe news outlets that you're more likely to experience less biases with?
Yes. We learned about it while researching at Berea College. It's for credible sources, actually. Any source that's from these media stations that are biased, we can't use within our research.
Yeah.
It's not a credible source. And you also have to look at who's writing it, what's their degree, what's their political bias. If they have very low, if they don't have a degree, then their voice is not credible within academics.
Yeah.
Looking for it. We're looking for it. Yeah. Important resources. All right, so you see this? The Goldilocks zone is basically NPR, BBC, The Washington Post, The New York Times, ABC News, NBC, AP, and Returners. And they are partisan bias, is what it's called, partisan bias. You need to stay in partisan bias. And they're mainstream. There's also sites that aren't mainstream that have partisan bias, but you need to make sure if you're looking for something where it's just straight facts, not any skewed language that could change your mind, then you want to have partisan bias.
Definitely. So, but you would say that the news outlets outside of this were inaccurately portraying the events of the protest?
Absolutely, with language versus riots and protesters, looters and opportunists. Mm-hmm. Language across the political sphere differs.
So do you feel like the language that they were using played a lot into the way that they were giving perceptions of these people?
Yes.
So how did the media perceptions differ from your view firsthand? Like, what were, if you were to, you know, make a Venn diagram in your head, what were the things that they were saying versus what you saw that were inaccurate?
Looters. The language of protest versus riot. Riots are a lot more violent. Riots are different. And even if it is a riot, what is the reason why these riots are happening? Why is riots wrong? In a sense, civil disobedience is because of a structure that's failing.
Yeah.
So why are we questioning the civil disobedience rather than the structure? So that's where it is for media. I don't think either side of the media has portrayed it correctly. It was more clickbait, get more money, rather than, oh, people are dying. They didn't focus on the human lives that were happening. They focused on the event and how much money they can make.
Would you also say that you feel as though they were potentially inciting mass hysteria by what they were portraying?
Oh yes, especially the right side. The left side did too, but the misinformation caused more confusion and more anger throughout the people.
So what outcomes did you really want to see from this protest? Like, what was the end goal for you?
The end goal for me, because I know that change takes a long time, especially in this country, is coverage, media coverage, have people talking about these issues. Because before, yeah, they were talked about, but as soon as the media coverage dies down, if it's not a part of your immediate life, people don't care. It's not affecting me, that's not my problem. But make people not have apathy towards other humans, but rather, these people are dying, and that's not okay. It's not of natural causes, it's by something that could have been fixed.
Yeah. So, how have your feelings about the protests and the goals of the movement changed since the summer of 2020? How do you feel about the protests today, and do you feel like the protesting had an impact on you or your society?
I have not been attending any protests, or I have actually not been into social media recently, just because I do need to focus on my future right now. But my feelings haven't changed. My spears, since I haven't been talking about it as much, has changed, though. My grandma still talks to me. She's less, like, aggressive towards me for having those, but I also just tend to not talk about it with people who I know immediately would get defensive. For protests today, the media coverage has shifted from Black Lives Matter to women's rights.
Yeah.
And of course, with women's rights, it's the white people who are in charge of that movement. That's how it is. White. There's no intersectionality with the current movement for that one. With black people, there was with the Black Lives Matter, there was intersectionality within that movement.
And how do you feel like this impacted you and your society? Like, how do you feel like this, you know, a lot of people going into this didn't think that racial issues were a thing anymore. So how do you feel like the protest may have changed some of those opinions?
There are more people, it incited more cancel culture, for sure. More people are scared to voice their opinions because it can lead to you losing your job. There is a sense of, if I'm not correct, I'm going to be bashed for it, as well as there is a sense of, it's not the job of black people to educate you, especially since you're all the resources at the tip of your fingers. Microaggressions have been going up, I do believe. Microaggressions on purpose have been going up. And society as a whole is looking more critically at race while also banning it from schools. Critical race theory has been banned from Texas, North Carolina, Louisiana, a few other places. There's teachers getting fired in higher education and in lower education for speaking about these issues because they're now relevant in schools today to prevent more from happening in later generations. But it just depends on which side you see it on.
And to round that up, again, I'm going to ask her, what's your definition of, your personal definition of a microaggression? This is something that I just kind of like to do, so when I'm looking back through things later, I can really kind of fit what you're saying and seeing where your head is at with things.
The best way to describe it to you is just Southern culture. Honey. Can be a microaggression, not towards black people, but towards white people. Microaggressions are, I like your hair even if it's not combed.
Oh.
Your hair looks so real when it's actually real and not a wig. How do you keep your hair in place? I wish I had texture. Things like that. Or your skin is beautiful. You're pretty good looking for a black girl. Just backhanded compliments that were sincere but uneducated.
Okay.
That's the best way to describe it. Or you can, there's also the fact you can be tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
Tone deaf with society. If you're talking about, if you start joking about trans issues like Dave Chappelle, he's very tone deaf right now. He just doesn't care. That's an instance where it's not a microaggression, that's a macro aggression, actually.
Yeah.
Tone deaf is more of a macro issue, but I feel like it needs to be talked about as well. If you're joking about issues that are still happening today and people are dying, that's not okay. That's not something you should joke about unless you're doing something actively to change it. And yes, there's freedom of speech, but there's no freedom from consequences of your speech. That's something to think about. And people aren't understanding that. They use freedom of speech wrong. Or at least the definition of it wrong.
So, as we're closing up, are there any thoughts that you would like to share, topics that you would like to revisit? And is there anything that you would like to discuss that we haven't already covered?
I'm pretty sure we've covered most of it.
All right. Well, thank you for your participation.